right? So he has two sons before he goes off to the war. And one of those sons is disabled. He has a normal proportioned and normal strength upper body, but he has withered lower limbs, which is, yes, very also of that tradition, right? There's all of these threads that keep coming, dropping in my lap out of nowhere. And he changes that boy's name from an anglicized American name. He changes his name to Mike Inope, right? So by now, I'm already thinking, as Mary Ella Dolly Moran is telling me this, and I'm typing as fast as I can, I'm thinking, okay, look up Mike Inope, because I know this guy, right? I know him already, like there's a meaning to this. As it turns out, Mike Inope was a Seminole Indian chief who is famous in American history for refusing to cede his lands to whites. Mm. So Mustafa comes back from the war, back from Ossabaw Island, where land has just been snatched away from him, and he changes the boy's name, this disabled boy, gives him this powerful, defiant name. But he also gives him a job, right? He's got normative strength in his upper body, but withered limbs. It is his job to row the children from where they live in isolation to school and back every day. So you have a name of strength and power and defiance, and you have a really important job that's about the future of your siblings, right? His last son, he names Grant, as in Ulysses S. Grant, Mustafa Shaw. Right? The funny part of this, for people who know me, and certainly for my peers who've been in graduate school with me, I was always unhappy with the story of slavery as it was told. Right? I knew it was too Christian, it was too forgiving, it was too compliant. Nat Turner was presented as a raving lunatic. John Brown was a crazed, psychotic, and I was just like, that's not it. Like, there's another story. I know there's another story. I just have to find it. And the defiance of authority charge mapped to Mustafa, which is the name you would give your firstborn son in that tradition. The fact that when they come for Mustafa, he has his service revolver and his pistol and his Bowie knife in his teeth. Or in my imagination, the Bowie knife is in his teeth. was the image of defiance I had been looking for my entire career. And he just keeps reinforcing it with each choice that he makes, right? So how does he create his wealth? So you've moved, you buy this land, you collect your family, your wife dies, you marry her sister, you proceed to have more children. So by the mid-1880s, early 1890s, he's got a bunch of mouths to feed, one disabled son, one fully able-bodied older son, and the rest of the mouths are like little stair steps. So I'm thinking, how is this guy? He can't be running a traditional farm. He doesn't have the labor for it. Where is the money coming from that he's got $1,000 cash on the barrelhead? And what I discovered is that he's made the economic choice not to grow Sea Island cotton, not to grow any kind of cotton, not to grow rice. All labor intensive, all soil depleting. He rejects that model. Instead, he plants fruit trees, and he grows peaches, and he grows pecans. So he has a constant trade, bringing those goods into Darien and by water up to Savannah to sell in the marketplace in a cash economy. He also cuts and sells the live oak trees on his property. He also fishes to feed the family. Mary Ella Dolly Moran said that their family always had the job of the women was to grow all of the produce that the family could probably need to eat. Beans, greens, tomatoes, peppers, onions, chard, etc. They raised chickens, they had their own eggs. They fished both crustaceans, shrimping in the area, pulling clams, and their father, her grandfather and her father, because the Morans and the Dollies and the Shahs are all living in the same enclave, hunted alligator and collected, and I haven't found this link, though I know that it's there. They collected and bound, the expression she used was like this deep in alligator skins. So I imagine that when I go to New York City and look at people who are doing shoes and bags and belts in alligator, that their connection is Savannah. Right? So again, that's not money that whites control. Right? I'm going out in the swamp and hunting alligator. That has nothing to do with any of the whites around me. They also hunted fox, same thing. The pelts are leaving, right? So they had ready cash, free from white scrutiny, control, or authority. And that's how they secured wealth and kept buying property. Mary Ella Dolly Moran's father and grandfather on the other side, the Moran side, are famous in Harris Neck for when the automobile arrived, having the first automobile of black people in McIntosh County, having a new automobile every 2 years in a moment where that's unheard of, for having a Victrola before anybody else had a Victrola, right? Because again, I'm thinking they're going back and forth. They're taking their goods to market in Savannah. They're banking it, but they're also bringing home trinkets and niceties for their family and their children, right? And that is the key to their success. It is also what makes them a target, unfortunately, for the decision